You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting. Welcome to Circus Maximus. I'm not hearing Nick right now, so Nick, if you can hear me, please do check your settings. Maybe try signing back in here. And that's what it looks like he's doing. So, please stay tuned, everyone. It is Friday night here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. And of course, you should go over and check out our sister site at RenegadeTribune.com. Couple other sites to mention, renegadevids.com, also whitesouthafrica.com for a very important documentary given the land grab that is now seemingly imminent in South Africa, which could lead to civil war. Jacob Zuma is really upping the ante. Nick, do we have you? Oh, Nick. Not hearing you. Damn, I don't know what's going on there. Alright, let me try to reduce some noise going on here. If I'm going to be on for more than just a minute. Okay. Close this door over here. So I don't make extra noise throughout the house. Okay, also, of course, beyondpizzagate.com, working hard on the second part. Nick is starting to get involved with some of the research involving the larger pedo gate, and section 3 will be it'll be very crucial to have Nick in there because he knows a lot about this area, especially Roy Cohn and the trafficking of children through the White House at the time of the Reagan White House with Roger Stone and, of course, many other administrations as well. But these scandals are just overwhelming when you're really taking a look at it all. Of course, there's hellstormdocumentary.com as well. Please go check it out over there. Sinead has heathenwomen.com. There is something for everyone. There are plenty of other sites that I've created or that I manage that I could mention, but please just do support everybody that's part of this network. Nick, do we have you back?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Do you know what the problem was?
You know what? Every time that I hook up my mic after my computer is on, it's almost as if I have to hook up my mic and then turn my computer on after the fact for my Linux to recognize the fact that I have a mic plugged in.
Linux. Mr. Fancy Pants over there.
Yeah. So I was all pumped up with my intro again, and it was no audio. So here we go.
All right. Have a good show, Nick.
Thanks a lot. So welcome, everybody, and thank you for tuning in. I was all ready to go and ready to roll, and here we are now. So thank you for tuning in. Like I said, today is March 3rd, 2017, and my week has been mostly involving work. And unfortunately, the aspect of researching is dwindling due to the fact of all the hours that I'm putting into work and the fact that I am a single father and there's not really much time in the day anymore. But hey, that's life, and I feel good about actually catching up on my bills and being a good slave in this American slave system. So, but the key is to eventually get off the grid and actually own land and do all the things that I have been planning on doing. It's just difficult when you're doing it on your own. So welcome. I had the opportunity to listen to a pretty decent podcast today that was on Tim Kelly's, I forget the name of his actual podcast, but he had a person by the name of Dave Collins on his show. And I actually didn't realize it, but I read his article when I did my Roy Cohn show about the CNP and human compromise and Roy Cohn's involvement and Craig Spence and all of the above with the CNP. So I did get in touch with Dave Collins, and he did agree to come on my show. So that's going to be pretty good. I'm looking forward to that. He was actually covering the CNP before myself and Josh Reeves. So he's very knowledgeable about the evangelical right, the so-called right-wing version of the CFR. And I have a lot of knowledge on that, and I think it's going to be a good conversation. So a lot of the work that Renegade has been putting out relates to human compromise. So this will just enhance and add to the experience of our listeners and provide more information that our hosts have not covered, and potentially have some of the information from this interview being included in the future documentary films that Kyle, Sinead, Hugh are putting together with their research. I'm doing the best that I can and throwing in links here and there, but nothing like what the three are doing. So that's going to be really good to have another researcher share their knowledge. I know that Dave Collins, he has a brother named Phil Collins, which is interesting, that they've collaborated, wrote some books, and they write articles, they do interviews, and I think that their information can be utilized for the documentaries that are being produced as well. So this is going to be fantastic. Otherwise, as far as what's been going on in the week, a lot of people are probably aware of the so-called threats on Jewish centers and synagogues and whatnot, and bomb threats. I know that Trump condemned these things that were going on. And I think there was a staged operation in Kansas, a shooting that allegedly took place that Trump also condemned. I think it was on an Indian group of people. Didn't really look too much into it, but a lot of people were calling it out as a psyop. So Trump called that out as, you know, we're condemning this. So he's perpetuating the psyops per usual. It's expected to have leaders and not leaders, but people in the upper echelons of government covering up for these operations. So we're reaching peak anti-Semitism here. A lot of what the laws have been being passed over in the UK, there was a bill that did pass the Senate in America in 2016 towards the end, S-10, the anti-Semitism bill or whatnot, that did pass, but it didn't pass the House. So we are probably going to see something like that happen here in America, where there's going to be a clampdown on anti-Semitism. Otherwise, in the news, generally, I look at my Twitter feed for a lot of the little nuggets that do occur. Sometimes there are good pieces of information that come out that, like, for example, I tweeted something about Sheldon Adelson. Let me get to that. About Donald Trump, as far as him being the most pro-Israeli president. Let's see. Let me pull that up real quick. Scrolling down. Real quick, let's cover this. This one's pretty funny. This is a classic Alex Jones photo op. Him bare-chested, hairy as hell, with two thumbs up, eating probably enchiladas. He's an enchilada-eating motherfucker. So this was on Spiegel. Meet Donald Trump's propagandist. Right-wing radio host Alex Jones is America's top conspiracy theorist. He has millions of listeners, but his most powerful one happens to be the president of the United States. Der Spiegel takes you inside his media empire in Austin. This was written February 28th. It's almost 11 a.m. with 3 minutes to go before his program goes on air. It's a chilly 65 degrees Fahrenheit in the air-conditioned studio, but Alex Jones is sweating. He wipes his forehead and goes through the day's schedule. His employees have found a number of magnificent outrages, says Jones. Scandals that should have been exposed long ago. They include the alleged secret plans of major internet companies to block conservative websites and the truth about the radioactive contamination of the Fukushima nuclear power plant. Jesus, Jones says with a groan. Where should we start? The screen lights up behind him. A small red light starts to blink. 3, 2, 1, cameras on, filming, we are live. Jones says into his microphone. It's Wednesday, February 2017, and the Democrats are melting away like a bunch of mentally ill children. Flirting with the mainstream. No, Jones is not an ordinary radio host. The founder of the InfoWars website has been living in his own world for the last 20 years. It's a world of clear friends and clear foes, filled with intrigues and scandals, cover-ups and conspiracies. Jones is convinced that the global elites have formed an alliance against the United States to destroy the country. He disseminates this message 5 days a week on the Alex Jones Show. Actually, I do believe it's 6. He does Sundays. Any broadcast from Austin, Texas. His show is aired on more than 100 radio stations, and his website reaches millions of Americans. Alex Jones, just turned 43, is the biggest conspiracy theorist in the United States. In the past, Jones had been labeled as a loony, marginal figure, but now he says he is in regular contact with the president and feeds him his ideas. Trump and I have talked several times since the election about freedom and our common goal to destroy our enemies. The times have changed in America since November. Loony marginal figures have shifted closer to the mainstream. And in the days of alternative facts, people with a bizarre worldview suddenly become influential media figures. There is no one this applies to more than Jones. Jones offered Donald Trump his determined support during the election campaign, and now the president of the United States is his most powerful fan, giving him a direct line to the White House. Your reputation is amazing, Trump raved when he was a guest on Jones' show during the campaign. What you're doing is epic. It's George Washington level, Jones said, returning the compliment. It was already cause for dismay at the time that Trump was aligning himself with Alex Jones, a man who has said a lot of crazy things throughout his life. For example, he believes the government possesses weather weapons it can use to create artificial tornadoes. Well, actually, that's not so crazy. He's convinced gay marriage is a conspiracy by a global secret society to encourage the breakdown of the family. That's not really that crazy either. And to get rid of God, he is 95% certain the World Trade Center was not destroyed by an attack on September 11th, but was in fact blown up by the government. the massacre at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012, in which 20 children died, a hoax created by gun control advocates. There is no subject on which Jones does not have his own version of the truth to offer, one supported by no facts whatsoever. So this is kind of regurgitating a lot of the same old, so really no point in going through this. I just got drawn to it, I guess, by the crazy photograph that they used for him. So really, you're not going to gain much enlightenment from this. So kind of a waste of time. There was a RAND Corporation release of 6 documents. They're actually selling them, but you can download them for free. I wanted to get into that, but there's a lot of length to this, and it would be very wordy. I do believe that people should look into it. There's 6 documents. It's called Exploring America's Role in a Turbulent World, a Strategic Rethink. And the first five of them were done and performed, written, put together before the election. And then the 6th one, which I wanted to read, was written after the election of Trump. So I think with the 6 different documents, you'll see a trend on the role that these think tanks are playing behind the scenes as far as what their intentions are for the next decade, I would say, based off of these documents and the summary of what I read. So I would check into those. I don't want to read them. I don't want to bore you. It's probably a lot of the same plans that we already are aware of, but I do think that there's going to be some nuggets in there, and I would say take your time and look into that. But seriously, go into the RAND Corporation. It's an influential think tank, and I'm sure most of our listeners are aware of RAND Corporation. All right, I tweeted an article related to the Pedogate. Israeli paid Colombians to film violent child pornography. Employee of defense services charged with possessing thousands of sexual videos, some involving kids and infants. This was written February 26 on the Times of Israel. An Israeli man was charged on Sunday with commissioning the production of violent child pornography and possessing huge quantities of exceeding graphic videos and pictures. According to the charge sheet in the Tel Aviv District Court, the suspect has been consuming abusive and often pedophilic pornography for years, downloading thousands of videos and tens of thousands of pictures from the so-called dark web, an unmapped portion of the internet that is often used by criminals to buy and sell illicit wares. The man's name was being withheld by the court, but he is described as approximately 50 years old and from central Israel. He is an employee of Israel's Defense Services. Through the court, did not specify which branch. The suspect was arrested February 13th, but was released to house arrest 2 days later on condition that he keep away from computers and cell phones. According to the state's attorney, while under house arrest, the suspect accessed the internet anyway and solicited the abuse of children. Sunday, the Tel Aviv court agreed to demand by the state prosecutors to keep the suspect in custody until the end of his trial. Hello, should have done that the first time. The man is not accused of personally assaulting children, but is suspected of paying others to do so on multiple occasions. He allegedly used websites on the dark web to contact producers of graphic, violent pornography as well as consumers of it. According to the charge sheet, the suspect made contact with 2 movie producers in Colombia in 2015 and paid them $1,500 to make him a film that would include a woman viciously attacking a young boy. The demand was that it should hurt the boy during filming and that you should be able to see the boy suffer. He allegedly reached out to the producers through the internet and paid them through PayPal. The suspect remained in contact with Colombian producers until his arrest in January and commissioned 8 additional videos showing sexual violence perpetuated against children. These videos featured both physical violence against the young children and rape, according to the indictment. After watching the videos, the man allegedly complained to the producers that they were not as extreme as he had demanded. Nevertheless, he allegedly promised to purchase more videos from them and put the producers in touch with other potential customers, according to the indictment. On two separate occasions in 2016, the suspect allegedly contacted women online, offered to pay them $300 to sexually abuse a child so that he can watch through the Skype video messaging application. Both instances, the women said they would not be able to make a movie in accordance with his requests. The suspect is also accused of helping disseminate child porn, as well as videos of severe animal cruelty. According to the indictment, the suspect had in possession hundreds of gigabytes of pornographic content, which included videos showing bestiality and rape of women, children, and infants. The suspect also collected videos of animals being dismembered while they were still alive. Hey, sounds like kosher slaughter. No big deal for Israelis, right? He allegedly gave out passwords to his collection on 280 occasions. And the suspect will be prosecuted by the state's attorney cyber crimes division. He was charged with soliciting the use of a minor's body for the creation of child porn, attempting to solicit the use of minor's body for the creation of child porn, soliciting the abuse of a child, attempting to solicit the abuse of a child, publishing illegal porn, publishing child porn, and two counts of possession of child porn. So that's a common thing for the Jewish clan. So nothing new under the sun. More of the same. A lot of this is coming out in the open. I don't know if it's to normalize it, but a lot of these scandals, a lot of child sex slave, pedophile, all this is coming out in the open, and we're just going to keep pushing it. We're not trying to normalize it, of course. We're exposing it. So here's one. Pope's clemency for pedophile priests under scrutiny following latest scandal. Pope Francis, this is on RT, February 27th. Pope Francis' unshakable belief in the power of mercy has been called into question after a previously convicted pedophile priest struck again around 2 years after the pontiff reduced sanctions against child-abusing clergy. The case of Reverend Mauro Enzoli, an Italian priest who received church clemency but was later convicted for abusing children, has turned the spotlight back on the sins of the Catholic Church. The report has revealed that Enzoli is now facing a second church trial after new evidence emerged against him. Enzoli was found guilty of abusing boys by 2012 Vatican investigation and was ordered to be defrocked. He appealed his punishment in 2014. Pope Francis overruled the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and granted clemency, reducing the priest's penalty to a lifetime of prayer. Horrible punishment. He was also prohibited from celebrating Mass in public or being near children, was banished from his diocese, and ordered to undergo 5 years of psychotherapy. How Jewy. However, in 2016, Enzoli was convicted by an Italian criminal court of sexually abusing five children between the ages of 12 and 6, was sentenced to 4 years, 9 months in prison. Greg Burke, the Vatican spokesman, has defended Pope Francis' proclivity towards mercy in such cases, stating that even those who are guilty of heinous crimes can expect clemency from the Holy Father. The Holy Father understands that many victims and survivors can find any sign of mercy in this area difficult, Burke added. Canon lawyers and church officials argue that keeping abusive priests under the authority of the church is the best way to protect children. In sharp contrast, Pope Benedict the 16th launched a major campaign to stamp out pedophilia in the Catholic Church during his brief tenure as Pope between 2005 and 2013. At least 400 priests found guilty of sex crimes against children were defrocked. Nothing new under the sun with the Vatican. Just keeps going and going and going. And then we got, real quick, we've got one from David Icke he posted. Yeah, David Icke. This is regarding Israeli lawmakers pass biometric database bill. Israeli lawmakers have passed a biometric database law to digitally encode personal information of all Israeli residents, including high-quality photos, for face recognition and fingerprints, but with certain provisions. Passed by a vote of 39 to 29 following a fierce debate in the Knesset, the biometric bill promoted by Interior Minister Arya Dery was adopted in the second and third readings, Haaretz reported. Before the legislation was passed, members of Knesset had to overcome two key issues, one dealing with police access to the database, and the second, whether minors would be included in it. Under the amended version of the bill, everyone living in Israel will be required to submit their personal details to the nationwide digital database, which will contain high-quality images for future face recognition. So if that's happening in Israel, and the Israelification is happening in Europe and America and the crown nations like Canada and Australia, basically you're generally European-based nations for the most part, since the Israelification is occurring in these nations, expect to see the biometric bills passing in these nations as well. That's my speculation, but it's not really too far-fetched. We're about ready to hit a break, and I would like to have some callers since I didn't really have too much prepared, and I'm just going off my trip tweet list right now. I was consulting with the people in our think tank, and I had a few different options of what I could possibly do, and I was going to read from the book When the Mob Ran Vegas, but I know that John Smith was covering the mob ties and whatnot in one of his podcasts, so wasn't really wanting to go that route, but what I wanted to do was cover that because my cousin gave me the book, and he said, "Nick, the story of our family is like a multifaceted diamond as viewed in a fading light. This book may offer a glimpse into a very small part of our history and the legacy that remains. Love, Joe." And then he wrote on the back of this, he said, "A child raised by wolves will howl at the moon," which is a Sicilian proverb. So we'll be right back after the break.
The gods have blessed our soil and blood.
See the future of the issue of immigration developing now across the whole of the European continent based on what you're seeing there in Germany?
This is a very good point because immigration is the future. You cannot work and live in a globalized world, in the middle of the world, in Europe, without immigration.
So there's a second thing in that black box, an unrelenting stream of immigration, non-stop. Fewer than 50% of the people in America from then and on will be white European stock. That's not a bad thing. That's a source of our strength.
Six, 0, 0, 9, 1.
Welcome back to Circus Maximus, everybody. And we are live. So if you're chatting it up and you are listening right now, call me. 747-999-6407. And I was able to find that article about Adelson. The Times of Israel. Yeah, you always find the goodies on the Israeli sites, huh? Our American news media is just bullshit. You don't have too many nuggets that come out of there, out of here. Adelson said to hail Trump as likely best president of Israel ever. Jewish billionaire, casino magnate, and staunch supporter of Netanyahu reportedly makes remark in front of Dick Cheney. Billionaire Sheldon Adelson, a major donor to the Republican Party, reportedly praised U.S. President Donald Trump's commitment to the Jewish state on Thursday, asserting that he would likely become the best president for Israel ever. According to CNN, Adelson, a casino magnate who is a strong backer of pro-Israeli Israel groups, made the comment at a private event at his home before an audience that included Dick Cheney, who served as vice president in George W. Bush's administration. The remark also came on the eve of the Republican Jewish Coalition Leadership Conference. Adelson did not commit to a candidate until May 2016. He endorsed Trump after it became apparent the real estate mogul would be the Republican nominee. He subsequently donated tens of millions to Trump's election campaign and to his inauguration. He and his wife were on the dais for Trump's inaugural oath-taking, a rare honor for campaign funders. Adelson also had dinner with Trump earlier this month ahead of Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to Washington. In a joint press conference between the two leaders at the White House on February 15th, Trump bucked America's longstanding exclusive commitment to a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I'm looking at two state and one state, and I like the one that both parties like, he said, showing receptiveness to Netanyahu's call for a regional initiative that relied on Israel's improving relationships with Arab countries. The United States will encourage a peace, and really a great peace deal, said Trump, and added that the matter was important to me personally. At the same time, the U.S. president turned to Netanyahu and said, I'd like you to hold back on settlements for a little bit. Oh, okay. The U.S. president was also critical of the settlements in a February 10th interview with the Adelson-backed Israeli Hayom paper, describing the enterprise as not a good thing for peace. You think? Adelson, 83, a staunch supporter of Netanyahu, is noted for his right-wing views. In November 2014, he told the Israeli-American Council in Washington that the Palestinians are an invented people, and that the purpose of the existence of Palestinians is to destroy Israel. Adelson is also indirectly involved in a graft investigation into Netanyahu, who is being probed into allegations that he colluded with the publisher of an Israeli daily, Yedioth Ahronoth, to try and reduce the impact of its competitor, Israel Hayom, in return for better coverage. So, yeah, good stuff there. And here's one from Allgemeiner. We are in peak anti-Semite mode here. Why do we let anti-Semites define anti-Semitism? All right. Well, in the U.S., we don't hear much positive news about how Jews in Israel are treated on college campuses in the United Kingdom. In fact, we mostly hear horror stories. It was refreshing, therefore, to learn that a Jewish Equality Act was adopted by the Students' Union at the University of London. This measure approved offering kosher dining options, access to multi-faith rooms, and rescheduling of events conflicting with Shabbat and the Jewish holidays. This was especially impressive decision, given that the aforementioned college had just 39 students who identified themselves as Jewish when the act was passed. Yet, sadly, even this triumph of common sense was marred when one cause was dropped from the final measure. What was the offending clause? It said that Jewish students should be given the right to self-determination and be able to define what constitutes hatred against their group, like all other minority groups. The president of the School of Oriental and African Studies Jewish Society, Avraham Sanger, proposed the act. Removing this line, he said, tells me and my Jewish peers that we are not able to define our own oppression, that we are not able to self-determine our identity, that it is one rule for us and another for every other minority group. Hey, welcome to being a white European. You know what I'm saying? This was just the latest example of a type of bias we see on U.S. campuses, where non-Jews tell Jews how they should feel, what offensive language and behavior they should tolerate, and what constitutes anti-Semitism. This is outrageous. Jews are treated like no other minority. Worse, university officials allow this discriminatory treatment and often defend it. Imagine if African-American students protested statements made on campus that they considered racist, and then the people who made the statement said the African-Americans are not the arbiters of what is and is not racist. No one would accept that argument on any campus in America. The same test could be applied to issues of sexism or attacks on gay students. The situation regarding Jews is the only exception. This perversion of language and human rights has allowed anti-Semites to openly criticize Jews and Israel on American campuses and get away with it. At the same time, hate speech directed against any other group is shut down immediately. If there is the slightest hesitation, protests are mounted until the offensive speech is curtailed and the speaker is punished. Remember, for example, the uproar when members of a fraternity at the University of Oklahoma were filmed singing a racist song on a bus off campus. University President David Boren expelled two students who were involved, an action several law professors called unconstitutional. Even before that incident, the university had created a five-hour course on diversity for faculty and first-year students, apparently in response to rumors of a planned Cowboys and Indians-themed fraternity party. Now let's apply the same standard to the students who will be sponsoring Israel Hate Weeks on campuses over the next several weeks, and the promoters of the college's BDS campaign. Jewish students and Jews around the world have said many of these programs are anti-Semitic. In 2015, the heads of more than 60 international Jewish organizations from all sides of the political and religious spectrum agreed that the BDS movement is antithetical to principles of academic freedom and discourages freedom of speech. The movement silences voices from across the Israeli political spectrum by pursuing the delegitimization of campaigns on campus. Proponents have provoked deep divisions among students and have created an atmosphere of intolerance and hatred. Moreover, the signatories said, "We recognize and accept that individuals and groups may have legitimate criticism of Israeli policies. Criticism becomes anti-Semitism, however, when it demonizes Israel or its leaders, denies Israel the right to defend its citizens, or seeks to denigrate Israel's right to exist." Jews decide what constitutes anti-Semitism. If Jewish students tell officials that certain statements and acts are anti-Semitic, then the administration should react the same way if African-American students complain about peers engaging in race baiting. One problem is the timidity of Jewish students. Other minorities do not hesitate to organize protests. Yet Jews, for some reason, have never had the fortitude, the interest, or the training to mobilize large numbers of their peers to demonstrate for their rights. You know, that's fucking bullshit, because most of these protests, a lot of these operations, movements are all run by Jews, started by Jews. So don't give me that garbage. All right? Imagine if hundreds of Jews at campuses like UCLA or NYU marched and organized themselves. This would force officials to take the anti-Semitic behavior of groups such as Students for Justice in Palestine seriously. Jewish students should demand that Israel Hate Weeks be banned and that SJP and other groups espousing anti-Semitic views, typically with student and taxpayer funding, should be banned from campus. So far, Fordham University is the only campus that has Jesuit Fordham University, where Trump went, is the only campus that has had the courage to do so, despite the howls of protest from defenders of anti-Semitic speech. In a statement that should be a model for other universities, Fordham Dean of Students Keith Eldridge Sett explained, "While students are encouraged to promote diverse political points of view, and we encourage conversation and debate on all topics, I cannot support an organization whose sole purpose is advocating political goals of a specific group and against a specific country, i.e. Israel." He added, "The call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions of Israel presents a barrier to open dialogue and mutual learning and understanding. First Amendment advocates may object to banning hate speech. Let them. It didn't stop Oklahoma from expelling students from singing a racist song. If, however, anti-Semitism is protected speech, then no university should be allowed to prevent other forms of offensive speech by anyone on campus. The Constitution will not win that confrontation. For too long, universities have been the one place in America where anti-Semitism is tolerated. It is time that university officials respect Jews' right to define our own oppression." Oy vey, we are so oppressed. But when you talk about the 1%, you're talking about over 40% of Jews. So you're so oppressed when 43% of the 1% are Jews. The 1% meaning the elites who are pulling the strings around the world. So 43% of the 1% are Jews. How are Jews oppressed? That's what I would like to know. Please answer that. All right. So I am looking forward to a caller. 747-999-6407. Please call me. All right. And as far as the expansion of settlements in Israel, we've got, again, Times of Israel. Protesters throng offer homes as troops begin evacuation. Hundreds of right-wing activists take over structures as border police cordon off 9 houses slated for demolition and settlement. And if you got your radio on, please turn it off. As a caller, I would appreciate that. And we've got we've got Greg in Kansas City. What's going on, my friend?
How you doing?
Doing good. And your mic sounds a lot better. What is that? The what do you call that?
It's the blue snowball.
The snowball. Yes. And I think our other host Patrick is just got that one as well. So. And it sounds good, so you don't really, I guess, need to spend double or triple the money of the other blue mics that are out there. I've got, I forgot the name of my blue, but regardless, you sound good, man. So what's going on? You did another podcast with Jeremy today, or you're just testing your audio?
We just tried it out. We should be going on air this weekend. We're actually going to be on No Lies Radio, launching a program on there pretty soon. So,
oh, okay. So it's going to be you and Jeremy doing your own show on No Lies Radio as a separate entity.
We're going to post the same shows on our SoundCloud page, but we're going to be condensing them to an hour a week. So,
okay. But as far as it's going to be like No Lies Radio, and then you're going to have your Antidote podcast as a separate entity of No Lies Radio.
Yes, and we may upload some things exclusively to our podcast too. So,
all right, excellent. Good news. You guys do good work together, and you cover a lot of hot topics. And on your most, you're welcome, man. And your most recent podcast, you guys were hitting hard on a lot of good topics. Did you want to cover some of those? I know you got a lot on your mind. You usually do.
Well, we went into the threat with the Jewish community centers and how it looks like we're being conditioned and set up for some sort of a false flag type event that's going to where Jews are going to be killed in some sort of event, and it's going to be blamed on someone. Haven't figured out who yet, although today a Muslim convert, former writer for The Intercept, was charged with making bomb threats. So,
an actual contributor of The Intercept?
Yeah, I used to write. He wrote a couple articles for The Intercept, actually. He had allegedly converted to Islam, did it because he was trying to get back at his girlfriend, as absurd as that sounds. A black man, so.
Well, the blacks tend to, a lot of times, convert to Islam, especially after they go to prison. I know that Christopher Bolin and a few other researchers happened to... Kevin Barrett actually went also to the Nation of Islam conference, and they covered 9/11.
Yeah, it was them and Richard Gage. So.
And Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers, I believe.
Yes, yes.
That's good stuff. So did you happen to hear any of that conference or any of the speeches? I haven't had an opportunity. Are those on video or anywhere that you know?
There are video links. There's a YouTube link to it.
Oh, okay, good. I'll check those out. So as far as the Jewish community centers and the bomb threats and everything like that, yeah, we're definitely, there's something being built up here for some event. I agree with that. And we can only speculate what that will be.
Yeah, I'd recommend the listeners, anytime Jonathan Greenblatt of the Anti-Defamation League is doing an interview, I would keep an eye on things he says, because he pretty much laid it out on the PBS Fake News Hour what the end game is. He was advocating for hate speech laws to be put in place on a state-by-state basis, and then he was on C-SPAN this morning. I tried to call in and talk to him, but I wasn't able to get through, so. But yeah. I mean, if you listen closely to Greenblatt, he's kind of laying out an agenda for what the atmosphere will be like post-terrorist attack type of scenario.
Yeah, and I think that the last year's flyers being the printers being hacked at universities by Weave and Andre England, you know, with the Daily Stormer flyers, the promotion of global white supremacy and swastikas. I think that happened multiple occasions, and I think that was part of the PSYOP to lay the groundwork for more of this hate speech and the PSYOP that's soon to come.
Very, very well could be true, especially with David Gass, the Chicago 7 Duke, mentoring him, so.
Who's that? David Duke mentored who?
Oh, Dave. Oh, he's like England's mentor, so that could very well happen. Mr. Gass, the Chicago 7.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, Chicago 7. Now, when it comes to England, I know that he kind of got brought up through Mike Delaney Prothink, so that whole connection to Christian identity and
interesting
potential... I don't know. I don't want to speculate on federal connections, well, but...
Yeah, I don't want to get into making comments about people I don't know about either, so...
Exactly, but there's been a lot of speculation with Mike Delaney as well as Andre England in regards to that. Just this whole PSYOP that they play, you know?
I would just say from first glance, you look at the Daily Stormer website, there's something very, very off about it, just by looking at the material on it.
I agree. What else did you guys cover on your podcast that you would like to share?
We got into a theory based on a couple of articles that have come out recently, particularly one in Counterpunch. I mentioned it on your program last week, the Putin-Netanyahu bromance. And Jeremy and I have pushed we've come to a theory about the actual roots of the Russian scandal, and that it's actually rooted in Israel, and that it very well could be rooted between a split between the U.S. neocons and the Israeli government over Russia.
Yeah. Russia's an interesting quagmire. just the whole BRICS thing and the Eurasian movement that I brought up on the program last time you called.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of gas pipelines, relationships being built with Turkey, Russia, and Israel. I don't know.
Yeah, a couple things, and what I don't think very many people realize is just how close of a relationship Netanyahu and Putin and the Russian and Israeli governments in general have built over the last couple of years, and it flies under the radar in the U.S., and this article explains the reason why. It's because it doesn't get talked about here in the U.S., because the American neocons and the Israelis are not going to make a disagreement between them public, although I think this is a pretty significant disagreement.
Yeah, and the thing is that Russia, I mean, Israel, the most spoken language, I would say, is Russian besides English and Hebrew, right?
I would believe so. I believe up to a quarter of the Israeli population is Russian. And also, Avigdor Lieberman, who's Russian-born, he's very much significant in this whole increasing of relations between the two countries. And another thing is that when you look at Trump's Russian mobster connections, it seems like most all of them go back to Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of Russian mob connections. Well, I wouldn't say Russian. When I say Russian mob, I would say Jewish mob, but yeah.
And I don't claim to know for sure, but that to me is as logical of a conclusion as anything else, the idea that perhaps this whole Russian thing is all about Israel. So, I mean, that's as logical as anything else I can think of.
Yeah.
And it would explain the neocon, if, you know, any real neocon hostility to Trump. It could be explained as that, and that it's all it all goes back to this dispute where the American neocons and the Israelis have a difference over just what kind of a threat Russia poses, because the American neocons, from a perspective of U.S. global hegemony, see Russia as its biggest threat, whereas the Israelis see Russia in some ways as an ally.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the it's more like a Cold War kind of a thing happening all over again, I would say, this whole staged mantra of a Cold War with Russia, the Russians are attacking, and, you know, we have to be on guard with the Russians, when really our own problems are internal, not external.
And it also makes sense that the right wing in Israel would be willing to back, you know, quote unquote, far right governments in the West.
Yeah, yeah, and that's happening already in Europe. We're seeing that rise of what they're calling the far right, you know, with your Geert Wilders and Le Pen and all the other different.
Yeah, France's Trump, Marine Le Pen, has an exclusive interview on 60 Minutes this week on CBS Sunday night. So,
yeah, and I wouldn't doubt if she became the president or prime minister, or whatever they call him over there. And I wouldn't doubt if Wilders actually gets the nomination also.
It'd be hard for some of these nationalists, for some of these anti-Zionists, to defend Wilders, because Wilders is even more like, you know, in your face pro-Israeli and pro-Zionist than a lot of these other leaders are.
True. The thing is with like Le Pen, she's actually dating someone who's Jewish, and her niece, Marianne Le Pen, her father was a Mossad agent, her biological father. So there's deep state ties right there. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. And did you see any of the recent news? Carla Kahn's been in the news recently.
I have not.
Okay. Yeah, on The Intercept, there was a recent article, Crony Capitalism at Work, Trump advisor Carl Kahn, strong arms ethanol lobby to save his own company millions. So this whole ethanol thing is just a scam anyway. We're polluting our ground by utilizing corn fuel to add, kind of like cut into the petrol to lower the potency of the petrol, using less. It's kind of like a drug dealer, like a cocaine dealer, where they're adding some kind of B12 or whatever they add to cut the cocaine. So they're adding corn fuels, and they're polluting our soil, where America could actually be growing just about any vegetation here, and most of our soil is being used to grow corn and soybean. So, and it looks like a can is being affected or is benefiting from his lobbying of ethanol.
Hey, it's capitalism, Nick, and Trump and Icon, they just want people to go to work. That's what Alex Jones keeps telling us. They just want Americans working again. That's all.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the main focus for the people who are Trump supporters is he's going to bring us jobs. And anything else on the side that he does, who cares? As long as we're working, there's food on the table, and we can have our bread and circuses and go about our life like we did 20 years ago when life was a lot better, you know, pre-9/11. Then if Trump can do all that, then he's our God emperor.
Hey, he's not perfect, but he's not out to get us. I think Alex says that at least once a day, so.
Yeah. And it looks like Carl Icahn reached a deal to sell the Trump Taj Mahal casino in Atlantic City to Hard Rock International. So a couple Icahn articles that just recently came out.
You know, it's funny with Trump, there's such a cult of personality around him. And I know a lot of the times, like, the left will exaggerate things, but a lot of the generic criticisms of Trump and the people around him are so spot on. It's like, and so as far as like his business dealings and all, he is what they say he is in many ways, just that they exaggerate it and they twist it to push a nefarious agenda. But I mean, a lot of ways Trump and the people around him are what they say they are.
Yeah. And even in the beginning, while he was running for office, people were like, I don't care about his mob ties. I just know that he's going to be better than Hillary.
Oh, yeah, you're still getting that. Like, people will say, oh, you wanted Hillary instead of Trump. Oh, like, don't criticize him because we could have had Hillary. I mean, I don't operate like that, and you don't either, so get out of here with that.
Yeah, right. Yep. We're about to hit a break. Are you going to stay on with me? I hope you do.
For a little while here. I'm going to try to go to 11. No guarantees, though.
All right, sounds good. And then we can have some more callers, too, as well. And I've got an article that I wanted to cover about Geert Wilders as well on foreign policy. So we'll cover that, too. It's how Geert Wilders became America's favorite Islamophobe.
Okay.
I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headline and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before. Where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the face of the man who sent the gun to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend.
Most of you are already aware that the sick freaks ruling our world are engaged in some of the most horrific crimes against children imaginable. This dark and depraved underground is something any healthy person would not even want to consider. But we must investigate their operations and expose these criminals to the light of day so that justice might be done. The recent Pizzagate revelations are just the tip of a massive iceberg. Watch The Big Picture, Pizzagate and Beyond. Learn the terrifying truth at beyondpizzagate.com.
It's unfortunate that when we feel stuck, makes us sin that
listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Welcome back, everybody, to Circus Maximus. I am your host, Nick Spiro. This is hour number two. I've got Greg from Kansas City on the line with me, my father's hometown. And Greg, did you hear that Trump is going to be building a Marine One landing pad for the helicopter over at Mar-a-Lago? So he'll have like a operating base with a landing pad and everything, like a second White House, I guess you'd call it, like a second headquarters for the president. Pretty interesting, huh? Oh, I forgot I muted you. Sorry about that. Welcome back, Greg. Sorry I muted you. What do you think about that landing pad that Trump's building over in Mar-a-Lago?
Just such a great use of the taxpayers' money. Imagine if Obama had done that. Just like imagine the reaction if Obama had exploited a dead SEAL's family.
Man, I just can't believe this all. This is just crazy that a president is pretty much getting away with being operating in a way that goes against the grain of your norm, which doesn't sound like a bad deal, but just the thought of our president, our so-called leader of our nation, operating separately, almost as if like there's a two lives happening right now. You know what I mean?
For sure.
It's interesting. So as far as Geert Wilders, this article, it says, at a dinner party in Reagan Presidential Library 2009, a relatively obscure Dutch MP named Geert Wilders was being honored as a hero of conscience by an organization called the American Freedom Alliance, which purports to defend Western values. Now, when I keep hearing defend the West and Western values, I just want to start putting parentheses around Western, you know, as far as the values of what used to be are no longer, but they want to maintain the type of values of the detriment, the downfall of what used to be. And they want to purport the existence of the bread and circuses and having 300 cable channels and Pepsi and Coke. And that's what Western values are nowadays, and the materialism, the cultural Marxism. And I just would like to just drop Western civilization and Western values out of the vocabulary if I could. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we really don't have any values, and it's sad because our biggest, what are said to be our biggest enemies, like Iran, for example, they're spot on about the state of our culture. It's just in our, just in general, I mean, their critiques are spot on. So yeah, there really is no such thing as Western values, and yeah, that term is extremely obsolete, so.
Yeah, it's pretty much like Hollywoodism today, you know. So after cocktails and a three-course meal, the lanky Dutch lawmaker with the shock of peroxide blonde hair got up to give what by then was his standard speech, its core message. that Islam is not a religion, but first and foremost an ideology, to be precise, like communism and fascism, a political totalitarian ideology with worldwide aspirations. There is no such thing as moderate Islam, he continued, because Islam's heart lies in the Quran, and the Quran is an evil book. He then laid out his plan to combat this evil: a stay on immigration from Muslim countries, the expulsion of criminal foreigners, and following denaturalization, criminals with dual nationality. Hey, I think we should do dual nationality with Israelis. Institutions and mosques. So I can keep going and going. You guys can check that out, foreignpolicy.com, how Geert Wilders became America's favorite Islamophobe. And that's a long article, but it's got some details about who this guy is. Yeah. So, Greg, what else is going on?
Oh, a lot. It's a lot. I mean, we're definitely this, we've got a lot of, there are plenty of Geert Wilderses around us, all around us.
Yeah, and the rise of that happened with the rise of Trump and the alt-right. And yeah, so here we are. We've got controlled opposition on the right, controlled opposition on the left, and here we are in between trying to point it out. And a lot of times we're called, I don't know what we're called. There's a lot of names for people over here at Renegade and those that point out the left-right paradigm. So we got enemies on the left and right.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, and calling out the control on each side, it really goes way beyond left and right. So I'd like to do away with those terms, too, just like I'd like to do away with the term Western culture. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, the left, right, you know, I've heard this so many times or seen it so many times, especially on Twitter with people from the alt-right, you know, quit punching to the right, you know, whenever you criticize any aspect of the Republicans or the Trump administration or anything like that, you're punching to the right. Like, stop that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what else, what other nuggets you got? You're filled with knowledge, and let's hear what you got. Anything that we should be looking into?
Really, I think that this this Russia and this potential that with the Counterpunch article and some of the details regarding the increasingly close relationship with Russia and Israel, I feel this is a key, and I feel that's a vitally important article. I also think it's important to understand the seriousness of what's going on with these community center threats.
Yeah, I just see that just continuing to happen.
I think it's interesting now that you've got Trump now tweeting that his Democratic rivals were meeting with Putin. We should investigate that. I mean, that throws another curveball into this whole thing. It makes it even bigger circus, it seems like. But
they're also covering Jared Kushner and Sessions meeting with the Russian ambassador, too, in December, I think it was, right after the election.
Yeah, apparently Sessions is in some trouble, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. As long as he gets those hate crime investigations going, I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's anybody that was not, you know, how they have to have like a committee hearing on a lot of the appointees for Trump. I don't see any of them that are going to be dismissed. I mean, we had Michael Flynn after the fact, but he's gone now. I'm sure he's going to be involved in some capacity or another, though.
Well, Bill Kristol got his guy, H.R. McMaster, in there, so.
Yeah, true.
They didn't get Elliot Abrams, but they got H.R. McMaster, and he's loved by all those people, so.
This is true. Otherwise, I don't know if you've been covering any of the Pizzagate drama, but David Seaman is
I heard about this. Yes.
Yeah, he was like kind of like the face of the Pizzagate research community, and he's been I guess promoting a company called Gold Money. I don't know if you looked into that company or not.
No, but I see that his his followers were playing the victim game. He basically got exposed, and then he deleted his videos, and now they're playing the victim game. See David Siemens being targeted because he's been exposing this, and you know they're playing the victim game. And
yeah, this gold money company was, in, a lot of the investors were Jewish, and I know I read that George Soros's son was also one of the major investors in this gold money company that David Siemens is promoting.
That would make sense. I remember Seaman was selling Bitcoin all the time a couple of years ago on RT, so.
Yeah, yeah. So this gold money company has got a lot of bad reviews, and allegedly you can get your gold nuggets mailed to you if you want to cash out, things like that. But just whenever you see anybody promoting gold, you gotta worry about them.
Well, that means about half the sponsors you hear on like GCN or Rents or places like that, you just, yeah, don't trust them.
Exactly. And a lot of the alternative media, like you said, they are promoting these type of sponsors.
Yeah. And it's been a really big deal in the alternative circles. I remember first getting into Ron Paul and all these people who were in these, quote, fringe movements. They all talked about investing in gold and silver and how they were, you know, this, and this person says we need to invest in gold. It's just like those people who pop up and, oh, man, I'm predicting the latest financial crisis. And this happened exactly the way he said it's going to happen. It's going to happen again. And didn't happen the way that person said, but they're still getting these people to give them their money.
Absolutely. Ted Anderson. He's got his gold hour. He used to jump into Alex Jones's show and do his gold promotion all the time. Have you heard of this Lucian guy that is the White House correspondent for the Gateway Pundit?
I haven't, but if he's associated with Gateway Pundit, I know they got their press credentials, which should tell anybody pretty much all they need to know about Gateway Pundit.
Yeah, this Lucian character, he's the one that produced the the photographs, the posters that were the twinks for Trump at the gay after party after one of the Trump, I don't remember what happened. It was the Republican convention. There was an after party called Gays for Trump. And Lucian is the producer of these posters with gay young boys, and they were all on the walls while they had Pamela Geller, Geert Wilders, and I forgot who else was there speaking, but Milo, of course.
Yeah, but Lucian Wintrick is his name. Yeah, I'm looking at him now. It's just it's amazing how so many of these like socially conservative people who are like in this like whole InfoWars Christian, right? I know InfoWars obviously a big hypocritical outlet, but I mean even the people who support InfoWars, you know, they're these right-wing Christian social conservatives, and their movement is entirely dominated by these you know, gay and all that, and people who are just subverting and making the cause of freedom like all about like these identity issues. It's just like how the left mixes in like, you know, gay rights and LGBT and all this stuff in with Palestine solidarity. It's the same thing we're seeing here on the right. And the right wing Christian base that loves Alex Jones and all these various Christian Zionists, they don't have a word to say about it.
Here's a recent article on Fox News. Todd Starnes from Fox News. Conservatives call on Trump to protect religious liberty. Christians are under fierce attack across the fruited plain, and some of the nation's most prominent conservative leaders are urging President Trump to take immediate action. More than 150 members of the Council for National Policy are calling on the president to issue an executive order protecting the practical exercise of religious freedom. For the last 8 years, Americans of all backgrounds have suffered the loss of their religious freedoms because of destructive Obama-era policies, the CNP wrote in a letter to the president. For the sake of full disclosure, I am a member of the Council for National Policy, this guy who wrote the article, Todd Starnes. So he's admitting that he's a member too. And I too share deep concerns about the future of religious liberty in our great nation. Among those signing the document are CNP President Tony Perkins, former Attorney General Edwin Meese, Morton Blackwell, Bob McEwen, Kelly Shackelford, Becky Norton Dunlop, Chad Connolly, and Dr. James Dobson, and Penny Nance. So that's not all 150, but that's some of the more prominent members. So Council for National Policy in the news. That was just today, or yesterday, actually.
Yeah, Starnes pushes some of the worst of the Christian Zionist propaganda as a regular fixture in the Fox community, so.
Yeah, I never even heard of the guy, so it shows how much I watch TV.
I guess, and he's one of those, we have to, we have a duty to fight ISIS, but only because Christians are being killed, It's one of those kind of people who uses the whole Christians are being persecuted by ISIS as a means to continue to push this clash of civilizations narrative. He's all in with that crowd and the Duck Dynasty crowd and the Pamela Geller, Robert Spencer crowd, so...
Yeah, and Chuck Norris.
Yes, Chuck Norris was just in Israel visiting Netanyahu.
Yeah, I know. That's why I brought him up.
Yeah, he brags about how the Delta Force was made in Israel. Might as well become an Israeli citizen, see how they like him over there. Because he adds nothing to America. I grew up with this, we had this cult-like worship of Chuck Norris because of all the Chuck Norris facts that came out. I just, roll my eyes at that stuff now.
Yeah, I know, right?
Such a superhero. I mean, he was Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah. And in other news, the White Helmets won a Oscar. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, that's just really awful. It's
it is awful.
God, yeah. That's another example of Hollywood. Just they create the heroes, much like they embraced Zero Dark Thirty and the anti-Iran movie Argo a couple of years ago. They're doing the same thing with the White Helmets, where the Western oligarch-backed humanitarian organizations are heroic and are all about freedom. And yeah, it's pretty sickening. I mean, and they've made these White Helmets out to be a heroic organization when they're a creation of Western NGOs and Western and pretty much the British oligarchy.
Yeah, and also the company that purchased, Academy, which was originally Blackwater. It was Blackwater, Z, Academy, and then Constellus bought Academy. They're also involved with the White Helmet operation. Yeah.
You don't hear any of the liberals, or the mainstream liberals bringing that up, of course. Of course, John Stewart, Leibowitz, he was involved in rehabilitating the image of Eric Prince a couple of years ago, so of course they don't bring that up. And
yeah, and it's just really crazy that Al-Qaeda can win an Academy Award. It's like the Nobel Peace Prize, giving the Nobel Peace Prize to all the terrorists of the world.
That's pretty much what happened. You posted some interesting articles. I guess Robert Mercer now is one of the owners of Breitbart.
He was one of the founders, actually. Okay.
Well, that makes sense because he was involved with Bannon and making those propaganda films, but I didn't realize he was still at this point is he still one of the owners of the site? Is that what came out?
Yeah, I wanted to cover that, actually. Thanks for bringing that up. Do you have the article in front of you?
Pull it up.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, I could pull it up.
I just tweet so much. I'm scrolling down and still can't find it.
Well, that's a good thing. You're keeping people accountable, so.
I posted a lot about Robert Mercer with Cambridge Analytica, too.
Because it's a key thing, so.
And I promoted this guy, Adam Kahn. He's covering a lot of the Trump connections, and he's been covering Mercer and the Jewish-Russian mob ties as well.
Yeah. It kind of links to this article that came out a couple weeks ago that was InfoWars was receiving these positive press releases about Trump during the run-up to the election, and that Stephen Miller played a key role in reaching out to, quote, alternative media. So,
man, I can't find that article. I don't know if I skipped it or not.
Here we go. This is a Guardian article. Robert Mercer, the big data billionaire waging war on mainstream media.
Is that it?
It's one of the articles that you posted with links to Donald Trump, Steve Bannon, and Nigel Farage, the right-wing U.S. computer scientist is at the heart of a multi-million dollar propaganda network. I'm guessing that has more to do with Cambridge Analytica than with Breitbart. It gets into the Medallion Fund and...
Okay, well, I found the one from Politico.
Okay.
Breitbart reveals owners. All right, Breitbart reveals owners. CEO Larry Solov. That sounds Russian-Jewish to me, doesn't it?
He's the one who posted the Conceived in Israel article.
Yeah. And the Mercer family and Susie Breitbart. Back in November, Breitbart began the process to secure official Capitol Hill credentials. On Friday, the site's CEO, Larry Solov, appeared before the Standing Committee of the Senate Press Gallery and revealed for what is believed to be the first time who owns the right-wing nationalist site that has grown exponentially in influence over the past few years. According to BuzzFeed's Steve Perlberg, who live-tweeted the meeting, Solov revealed that the owners are himself, founder Andrew Breitbart's widow, Susie Breitbart, and the Republican mega donor family, the Mercers. Breitbart's family owns the largest stake. Within the rules of admission to the gallery, there is a clause that states the person and organization holding the pass must not be engaged in any lobbying or paid advocacy, advertising, publicity, or promotion work for any individual political party, corporation, organization, or agency of the U.S. government. In order to prove that they are not engaged in any of the above and are an editorially independent institution, the Standing Committee can ask for information or proof on how the business is structured. Solov said during the meeting that he wants to disclose as little as possible about the financial and ownership structure. But the Standing Committee had questions, per Perlberg, about Steve Bannon's involvement. Bannon was Breitbart's chair until he joined the Trump campaign last August and is now chief strategist at the White House. In the meeting, the committee asked for proof of Bannon's disassociation from the site. Solov said Bannon resigned to him via phone, but the committee said it wanted a letter stating the date of his resignation, that it's a termination and not a leave, and for the letter to address any editorial and financial interest. Quote, if I could get Bannon to write it down, I would, Solov said, according to Perlberg. Breitbart has publicly said in the past that it does not discuss its investors. The Mercer family, who backed both Trump and Senator Cruz, had been believed to be major backers of the site. There were rumors early in the 2016 primary campaign that Trump himself was financially involved, but that's been denied by both parties. In the meantime, Breitbart reporters have been able to report from the Capitol using a temporary pass until a decision has been reached on permanent credentials. So that's interesting. They're very secretive. Very, very, very secretive. And you would think that the rules and regulations that I listed here or read off, as far as must not be engaged in any lobbying or paid advocacy or advertising, that Breitbart would be not given press credentials because of Robert Mercer, especially, you know?
Yeah, funny how that works. They're supposed to be the hated villains, the counter to the establishment, and yet all these conflicts of interest, all this secrecy, and they still have free reign.
Yep, that's what happens when you live in a synarchy.
I don't think a lot of people understand that Breitbart really is the new mainstream media. I think a lot of people still don't understand that.
Well, same with InfoWars, I would say, as well.
Yeah. Breitbart even more so. It's even more obvious with Breitbart, but a lot of people still don't seem to realize that. When they talk about the media, they're still talking about the old traditional media like New York Times and Washington Post, as if that represents the entire opinion of the establishment. That's just not true anymore.
Right, right. And I remember reading off an article that, I forget his name, who does... Oh, man, what's his name? Anyways, read off an article he wrote that mentioned somebody that was living in a house in Florida that I think Steve Bannon owned, and this guy is tied to the mob and a lot of different stock market scams and whatnot, was living at a house, or Bannon was living at this house or something like that. And this guy is a contributor to Breitbart, and how he was like all ecstatic when Drudge posted his articles that he wrote on Breitbart onto the Drudge Report. So the Drudge Report is also deeply connected.
Yeah, I think the Drudge Report's been a long-term direct Mossad, direct connections to the Mossad, because remember, Drudge was the first person to break the Lewinsky story. And of course, there's a lot of Mossad connections to that, if you believe the revisionist version of history on that, which I do, so...
Yeah, and the impeachment process, the whole operation on Bill Clinton, was conceived in a Council for National Policy meeting, according to Bob Barr, who was a CIA asset as well and a CMP member.
Yeah, former libertarian candidate for president, last thing for an anti-war libertarian.
Yeah, so with the CMP, it doesn't matter with CMP or CFR, you're going to have Mossad operatives in both think tanks.
And the other thing with the Drudge and Bannon and Andrew Breitbart is there's all a mutual Hollywood connection between the three. Drudge has always been this Hollywood tabloid type reporter. Andrew Breitbart got his start at E Network. And of course, Bannon was a Hollywood producer. And so it's part of the psychologically mastering, like psychological warfare, this Hollywood connection between these prominent alt-right media moguls.
Absolutely. And the Clinton Chronicles was widely being distributed amongst the CMP members as well.
Yeah.
who was that
Gary one of Falwell, the wasn't it was Falwell one, behind the Clinton Chronicles?
I know the one guy who claims he was a hitman for the Clintons, who turned on the Clintons. And a guy that's been on the Alex Jones show quite a bit.
Oh, you're talking about Larry Nichols, a cancer man. Yeah, cancer.
Yeah, Larry Nichols, exactly.
Larry Nichols, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he was definitely involved with the Clinton Chronicles as well.
He was the one who was, along with Alex Jones, warning of Hillary Clinton's literal demon qualities as far as, her stench and everything, literal demon stench. That was Alex Jones and Larry Nichols.
Hey, we'll be right back for the last half hour, everybody.
Concern is doing away with whiteness. Whiteness is a form of racial oppression, sure. The suggestion is that it is somehow possible to separate whiteness from oppression, and it is not. There can be no white race without the phenomenon of white supremacy. In the same way, if you abolish racial oppression, you do away with whiteness. Treason to whiteness is loyalty to humanity.
Your views are fairly well received in academia.
Yes, they're legitimate. Not to say that everyone agrees, but sure. And the task is to bring this minority together in such a way that it makes it impossible for the legacy of whiteness to continue to reproduce itself.
Time.
Welcome back, everybody. I've got an article that I wanted to cover. I've done a lot of research into the Chile coup d'etat with Pinochet and the Mossad and CIA involvement with that and the neoliberal agenda, and basically the copper was a huge asset to take on with the neoliberal agenda over in Chile. So here's an article from 972mag.com. Investigate Israeli complicity with Pinochet's crimes. Family members of a Chilean man disappeared and murdered by the Latin American dictator who want Israel to open a criminal investigation into officials who cooperated with the murderous regime. Two Israeli women who immigrated from Chile are taking Israel's attorney general to court, demanding that he open a criminal investigation into Israeli officials who were involved in arms deals with the regime of Augusto Pinochet for aiding and abetting crimes against humanity. Lily Traubman and her daughter Tamara Santos Traubman moved to Israel in the 1970s after being persecuted by the Pinochet regime, which also disappeared Lily's father. The suit, filed by attorney Tay Mack, seeks to compel Attorney General Mendelbit to open criminal investigations into the involvement of personnel from the Israeli Ministries of Defense and Foreign Affairs, the Israeli Army, and civilian arms traders. Pinochet took over Chile on September 11th, 1973, overthrowing its elected government and its Marxist Prime Minister, Salvador Allende. The next day began purges of anyone suspected of having leftist leanings throughout Chile, but particularly in the school system, which lasted until 1990. During the first years of the new regime, around 3,000 persons were abducted and murdered, and over 35,000 people were tortured by DINA, the Chilean Secret Services. Now, that number, 3,000 people abducted and murdered, that's a very low figure, by the way. The regime never admitted these crimes. Israel was reportedly involved in training the DINA. One of the victims was Ernesto Traubman, Lily Traubman's father, and Tamara's grandfather, who was abducted at the outbreak of the coup, tortured to death in the Chilean Ministry of Defense in Santiago, and went missing for about 20 years until his remains were located and given to the family. For the past several years, the Traubman family had been struggling to expose the connections between Israel and the Chilean regime at the time. The two women filed Freedom of Information requests in 2015, seeking to gain access to documents related to the arms trade and Israeli political support of that regime. Like the Israeli collaboration with genocide in Guatemala and their Argentinian dictatorship in those years, there is an abundance of publicly available evidence of the ties between Israel and Pinochet's Chile. So you outright dumbasses who praise Pinochet for throwing people out of helicopters, but then you say that you're anti-Israel and you want to expose Jews, then why do you praise Pinochet? Please. I want to know. So
The same people praise the Nicaraguan Contras, and they praise the quote-unquote anti-communist efforts all throughout Latin America. Now you've got Drudge Report posting a celebratory article about Venezuela allegedly being down to its last $10 billion, as if that's a good thing. Like, yeah, this has been a long term. This is almost like you could see this as being like a test drive for how the people responding to Trump is that these dissidents on the right, ostensibly anti-Zionist, I mean, they have long been cheerleaders for people like Pinochet.
Yeah. Yep. And real quick, for example, according to a cable from the U.S. Embassy in Chile sent April 24th, 1980, which was attached to the Women's Freedom of Information request, Israel was a major arms supplier to the Pinochet regime. According to a cable quoting the American Undersecretary of State from April 10, 1984, Israel was one of the main arms suppliers of the junta, which made it difficult to enforce effective sanctions against Chile, considering that American sanctions did not apply to Israel. So here's a photo of Pinochet meeting with Kissinger in 1976, all happy together. Hugo Harvey's 2012 book on the covert relations between Israel and Chile in those years also contains revealing evidence from the Chilean side of the arms trade between the two states. Israel, however, still refuses to disclose evidence from the Israeli side, including tens of thousands of documents. In response to the Trabin's Freedom of Information request, the Israeli Ministry of Defense claimed that the extent of such documentation is so vast that it is unlikely to be able to review them all in order to decide what can be exposed. Although the court rejected the state's reason for refusal, to date the state of Israel continues to drag its feet and has not released the relevant documents. So the current appeal to the Attorney General is one of the several of its kind in Israel and the first in the Chilean context. The arms traders and arms traders and Ministry of Defense personnel in charge of such shadowy exports and training, seemingly complicit in war crimes in the world over. Nowadays in South Sudan and in Burma, earlier in Bosnia and throughout Latin America in the 1980s, are not being held accountable. Their deeds are whitewashed using arguments of state security and potential harm to Israel's foreign relations should the crimes ever be exposed. There's no statute of limitations for crimes against humanity. Even if Israel does not consider them as such, an international court can exercise its authority in this regard. It would be fitting for the state of Israel to help supply the necessary evidence for such a case to proceed. In this case, that the appeal to the government legal advisor does not result in a criminal investigation, the petitioners are considering turning to courts in Israel and in international fora. So it's there. Israel uses the same excuse as America in case of national security, right?
Very, very true. It's funny, the other thing about all these right-wingers who still praise Pinochet, they're also praising Henry Kissinger because Kissinger was the person behind the Chile coup.
Yeah, and the CIA.
Yeah.
They were praising the CIA. Yeah. That I even had somebody tell me, well, this is one of the cases where the CIA was in the right. You know, they did a good thing in this case.
Or that Trump's bringing in patriots to run the CIA, like Mike Pompeo, the number one Iran hawk in the House, who just went to Saudi Arabia and was awarded the George Tenet Counterterrorism Award.
Yeah, but he's related to the Pompey guy or whatever, that Mark Glenn.
You can't beat that logic. You cannot beat that logic, Nick.
That's hilarious. I haven't seen anything more recent from him. Have you?
I can't stomach his website anymore.
No, it's just gone so downhill, man. Downhill.
I hope, perhaps maybe our mutual friend Jonathan can have a few words with him, but that's his cross to bear, Mark Glenn's cross to bear. So I don't think Michael Collins Piper would go along with all this if he was around today. I just don't think.
Not according to Trevor LeBond when I had him on my show.
I mean, Piper would have been all over the Breitbart connections, I think.
I agree.
I could be wrong, but I suspect he would be.
I agree. One thing about Collins Piper, he wrote an article about Ferdinand Marcos and how he was anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, and da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, come on, man. The CIA went and rescued him when all of the people were starting to revolt over in the Philippines. So we got a new guy just like Ferdinand Marcos over in the Philippines, Duterte. Similar character.
Yeah, he's a lot like, I guess, maybe the Trump of the Philippines, and because the usual suspects in the American media bash Duterte constantly, he must be a good guy by default because of that.
Yeah, some people still feel that the drug problem has escalated so bad that what he's doing, he has every right to do that. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty brutal. having right-wing death squads.
Yeah, but I mean, what we've seen, I mean, with people like Steve Pachenik tipping their hand on InfoWars, these people always supported this stuff. They just are really coming out of the closet about it now.
Yeah. It's a lot more vocal now because the degenerate left is taking over, so we need to bring back the death squads.
Yeah. Yeah. Pechenik, who was one of the few people to actually go on the Alex Jones show, and he would at least allude to Israeli involvement in September 11th. He was just on there the other day praising the new right wing governments in Brazil and Argentina, which overthrew the popular governments. And now he says the Venezuelan dictator needs to go. So.
Right, right. Because they're evil Marxists.
And sadly, there's a good chance of that happening under Trump. I hope they can, you know, they avoid the fate, but. And that's also where you could see this pope make his influence being the Latin American pope. So I've talked for a while about the possibility of a Latin American spring that could very well happen under the Trump administration.
Oh yeah, I definitely, like Jonathan did say, you know, Venezuela is probably next on the list.
Yeah. Well, I think that was obvious with that. That's probably why. That may be one of the key reasons why Tillerson was put in there. And some people say perhaps Trump's ego did us a benefit by not bringing in Abrams, but I'm sure they can find someone else to do the duty. So,
yeah, if you think about it, does it really matter, Tillerson or Abrams? I mean, it's still going to – the agenda is still on the table of whatever the deep state says is going to happen. So these people are going to do what pretty much is directed of them.
Yeah, Trump and Marco Rubio were pictured together with the wife of the Venezuelan dissident, Ivy League educated dissident leader, Leopoldo Lopez. It's funny how everyone from Breitbart to CNN to Fox to Sean Hannity to whoever Trump's major detractor is on MSNBC, they all agree that Venezuela is evil and needs regime change.
Exactly, exactly. And they're just oppressing the people. Look how poor they are, where they don't cover the fact that there's at least one oligarch that owns one of the largest food companies over there, and how they manipulate the currency to where you're not getting your, you know, like devaluing the dollar kind of a concept, how they, the oligarchs are doing what they can to become more wealthy as the poor get more poor.
Yeah, even Fusion, which is a subsidiary of Univision, was Jorge Ramos, the top propagandist on there, who picked a fight with Trump right when he got elected or first got into the presidential race over his immigration stance. I mean, that's one of the major anti-Venezuelan media organs as well. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Parent of Univision, of course, so, which is the Hispanic audience with all the propaganda. So,
then a larger corporation conglomerate just buy Univision?
Not sure.
Yeah.
Univision bought out Disney's stake in Fusion last April.
Okay.
Not totally sure.
Oh, Univision. Oh, I was going to say Univision bought Gawker, but that's no big deal. Who cares about that?
Gawker's like dead anyway. Thanks, Hulk Hogan, for that.
Yeah, right. So we got about 15 minutes, man. What else is on your plate? What else are you looking into and researching into?
I just think it's going to be very interesting to do. Whenever Netanyahu and Putin meet in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be very interesting to see what is discussed and what revelations come out of those meetings, because even though the American media won't cover it, you can find a lot of information within the, you know, Israeli papers about it, the Russian papers about it. So for sure, seeing what's going on with Israel and Russia. And apparently, Jeff Blankford in this Counterpunch article had put out that in one of their meetings last year, they announced there would be a joint, Russian-Israeli military exercise. And he says with the increased anti-Russian climate in the U.S. media, that would be very hard to black out.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about the $1 trillion infrastructure proposal?
I see it as it's throwing bones to the America First people. And my thing is, I'm not an economics person. I'm not a expert on those kind of things. But I'll say that I think that this really is just throwing a bone to the America First people. It gives you the idea that, hey, he is going to put America first. Meanwhile, the continued agenda, the overall agenda continues. And I just wonder how America First Trump's actually going to be when his entire economic policy team is made up of Goldman Sachs alum and Rothschild Inc.'s Wilbur Ross. Of course, these are the good patriots that are involved, the dissidents from the from the evil institutions, because only the good patriots are the ones who joined up with Trump. The rest of them are all evil. But I think it's throwing a bone to the America First people, and I just wonder how America First you can be when that's who's comprised your economic team.
I can also see, we foot the bill for building bridges and developing better roads and infrastructure. But at the same time, what happens is a lot of the infrastructure ends up getting privatized after the fact and sold off to global corporations. So
that's a great point. Like, the Israeli company is going to build the wall.
Exactly.
You know, it's funny, Trump once again during the speech this week, he laid out his vision for NATO, and pretty much his vision for NATO is, oh, it's perfectly okay to commit all the crimes in the world as long as the NATO countries help with the bill.
Yeah, right. Yeah, continue the Gladio events as long as you're paying for them.
Exactly. As long as Merkel puts her fair share up, they can do NATO and can do whatever it wants.
I don't know if you heard my broadcast a while back when I was covering the, I think it was Nice, the truck attack. I read an article that the French government has a fund for terrorist events that take place. So it's like whoever is affected by these terrorist events, victims or whatnot, are entitled to getting paid for being a victim in a terrorist incident. So it's the taxpayers are paying for Gladio events. That's crazy, isn't it?
It is, but hey, you know, but the patriots are taking over the Western world. So as long as we have to pay for them when we've got people who say the things we like to hear, it's okay. It's amazing how it doesn't surprise me because there's so many charlatans that are like in positions of influence, but it still amazes me just how effectively people have fallen so hook, line, and sinker for this. I mean, I was posting on, I posted that my Facebook feed used to be more fun back when people weren't parroting everything the sitting president of the United States said and did. So,
did you see this article on the Renegade Tribune? Army colonel, politicians, and state employees arrested in high-profile child sex sting. This happened in Florida. A broad net cast in North Florida by law enforcement officials to catch child predators landed a dozen men. A retired U.S. Army colonel, a high-ranking Florida State University attorney, and the page and messenger manager for the Florida House of Representatives, among others, who were attempting to meet up with younger girls. As part of a major sting, 12 men ranging from 21 to 70 years of age were arrested by authorities after they made contact through emails, texts, chat rooms, and internet ads with undercover officers pretending to be teen girls. So what do you think of all these different child sex pedophile cases coming to the surface? A lot of the Trump supporters are saying, look at Trump. He's only been in office for a little over a month, and over 1,500 people have gone down for child pedophilia.
It almost seems like it was done by design.
Yeah.
And Trump meeting with the child trafficking groups, saying he's going to put an end to it once and for all, and he's being built up as the great humanitarian. Meanwhile, I'm waiting for the crackdowns on this network that Roy Cohn was affiliated with, that's probably, you know, still running, as I'm sure is running as smoothly as ever. I'm waiting for the investigations into that, as well as this story of this labor secretary giving Epstein this sweetheart deal is flown completely under the radar. You notice how the media did not pick up on that, and how all this stuff about Trump continues to be constantly publicized, but the latest connection to Jeffrey Epstein was completely ignored. Continues to be with the new labor nominee.
Yeah. What was that? Acosta, right?
Yeah, Acosta.
Yeah, he gave, what did he give him? 3 months or what did he?
It might have been like 15 or 18 months. I'm not,
Oh, yeah. But I don't think he served all the 18 months either, though.
Probably not. He probably had a very Madoff-esque prison sentence in some country club somewhere.
Probably. Absolutely. So we got about 10 minutes, man. What else?
Looking at trying to see how long he gave him. Exactly how long? Oh, Epstein served 13 months of an 18-month sentence. So that was passed down by Alexander Acosta. So.
Yep. And then here's an article from Bloomberg. Does Stephen Miller speak for Trump or vice versa? The 31-year-old is driving force behind the White House policies. Stephen Miller's corner office in the West Wing of the White House is utterly barren. No pictures on the walls, no books on the shelves, no indication of even who inhabited the space a month earlier before the Obama administration cleared out. Couldn't tell you. Trump's intense and polarizing 31-year-old senior policy advisor says with a shrug, Miller isn't being unfriendly. Rather, his Spartan surroundings and indifference to small talk are byproducts of a life part of every detail that doesn't advance the singular glory of Donald J. Trump. Concerned that Trump wasn't accruing the praise Miller felt was merited, he wanted to set the record straight. Donald Trump has fundamentally realigned American politics, he says, stabbing a finger on his desk. It's time the media acknowledge this and give him the credit he deserves. So what do you think of Stephen Miller?
He's David Duke's favorite Jew, so...
Yeah.
Miller is definitely pushing, Miller was like, Sessions, I believe, top speechwriter, actually.
Yeah.
And Miller's clearly one of the keys to this whole, Likud connection or hard right connection to the American patriot wing, quote unquote. And there's another one who's another one of Trump's strategists now, Julia Hahn, another Jewish Breitbart writer who Bill Kristol said will make Steve Bannon look like a moderate in comparison. So really? Yeah, these extremist Jews, and then of course, you got Sebastian Gorka, the national security guy who keeps getting pummeled. The Forward keeps writing about his anti-Semitic connections, when in reality he's connected to these very, Israeli loving Eastern European outlets that they might have some Nazi symbolism or whatever, but they're very Judeo. What is that? They're very much Judeophiles when it comes to Israel, and that's what, of course, gets left out of all this. But yeah, it's clearly, when you look at people like Stephen Miller and Julia Hahn and Sebastian Gorka, you can see just how much of how friendly this new administration, or you might want to call it regime, is to the hard right in Israel.
Yeah, this is a really good article, by the way, that people should read. I'm putting it in the chat room about Stephen Miller, though. So okay. people should read that from Bloomberg, very detailed, and kind of get a glimpse of his personality and his ties and his beliefs. And he is also a friend of Richard Spencer's over in Duke.
And of course, Spencer, he's disavowed Spencer. I wonder how serious that is, though.
Like, yeah.
How genuine that is, because it seems that they really do have the same beliefs.
Yeah. They do. Not too far from one another as far as their belief system goes. Wow, this is a long article on Stephen Miller. Holy cow. They even have an audio.
We need, though.
Yeah, this is there's even a SoundCloud audio file on it, too, about 10 minutes long that people should check out. So we got about 4 minutes, man.
Yeah, I was thinking in correlation with this Miller, Hahn, Gorka, Breitbart takeover of the U.S. government. Paul Joseph Watson likes to say that they're the conservatism is the new counterculture. No, man, the alt-right is the new establishment, and you're a shill for it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. This is just so the craziness going on right now in this lifetime. Information overload is what I'm going through. I don't know about you.
Same here. And you'll feel like a voice in the wilderness, because very few people want to actually even look into or even like acknowledge that something's very wrong with this Trump administration, much less admit that they perhaps had the wool pulled over their eyes. So you almost feel like a voice in the wilderness sometimes.
Yeah, and the problem is a lot of people won't admit that they made a bad decision or their leanings were a mistake. Yeah. Admitting that there was a mistake done on someone's part, they're just going to go with the flow and then write it out.
Well, I think that that comes from just how, I believe, as bad as the Clintons are, that the alt-right really exaggerated the depths of their evil and made Trump look good in comparison, and therefore, oh, well, we had to get Clinton out of there and blah, blah, blah. We couldn't. But, you know, I almost voted for Trump. I didn't end up voting for him. I almost did. But, you know, I can say now that I was wrong to ever have this belief that Trump, or at least the people around him, were any better than Hillary Clinton and the apparatus surrounding her. And I think it's going to be very difficult for people who have faith in Trump or who had faith in Trump to admit that, but I think it's something that's going to be necessary to do if you're an honest person as time goes on.
Real quick, Q Whiteman shared an article from a website called Broadly. I don't know if it's related to Vice because it says broadly.vice.com. Anti-Trump witches and 4chan magicians are battling over the future of America. So while witches gather nationwide to cast a binding spell upon our new president, a mysterious 4chan cult claims to have gotten Trump elected through the power of Peep and the Frog and his connection to an ancient Egyptian god. So check out that article too.
Yeah, I've seen articles that Lana Del Rey, the music star, has joined the hexing of Donald Trump by all these like witches or whatever. And this is the kind of stuff that like that superstitious fan base of Trump is going to eat up and say, see, they're all after him. Look, they're doing hexes on him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's much like Rosie O'Donnell, who's still more courageous than most of these right figures have ever been on the topic of September 11th. They go after her because she does a misguided protest of Trump when she still had more courage on that matter than they ever did.
Oh, I can't stand that woman, though.
I know, I understand. But, I mean, it's amazing how they ridicule her when she still went further on that particular topic than they ever did.
Yeah, well, Greg, I really appreciate you calling in. You saved my ass tonight. And, I'm looking forward to talking to you again soon. And this is the end of the show, my friend.
All right, well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on there. All right, everybody, have a good weekend. Tune into the Roundtable tonight or tomorrow and Kyle's show on Sunday. Have a good night, everybody. Circus Maximus provides an in-depth analysis of geopolitics, historical events, social engineering, and the kosher Nostra who are attempting to bring about a global, technocratic feudal system. Nick Spiro brings forth his passion and years of research, unveiling the esoteric agendas of the deep state, black operations, NGOs, think tanks, secret societies, ancient bloodlines, and controlled opposition movements behind the Jewish veil. Tune in live every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Renegade Broadcasting.